Good morning. Lauren McLean for the petitioner in this matter, Mr. Dennis, and alongside me is Ms. LaJuan Anderson, my co-counsel. And I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if it pleases the court, for rebuttal.
Sure.
Your Honors, this is a case about timing, and that may seem rather obvious, but I'm not talking about the obvious timing of when does that 5 years of crime-free period have to occur. I'm actually talking about the timing of when a petitioner decides to petition for restoration. Like Mr. Dennis and Mr. Paseno, they decided, because they have the discretion to decide whether or not to actually come forward and ask for restoration, they decided at a time following a long period of crime-free behavior and no convictions, and they decided after a time where they actually suffered a non-disqualifying criminal conviction, one in which they did not lose the right to a firearm.
Why shouldn't they be required to follow the statute and apply after a five-year or more period of crime-free behavior?
Because State v. Swanson actually tells us that they don't have to. State v. Swanson was a case where Division II said, hey, look, you know, the trial court has a ministerial function only. The trial court does not have any discretion under this statute whatsoever. However, they point out in pages 71 and 72, they say, you know what, though? Someone does have discretion under the statute, and it's the petitioner who has discretion. That petitioner can decide when they want to come forward or not, which is very consistent with the language of this statute.
Well, they can come forward whenever they choose, but they have to have been crime-free prior to that.
I absolutely agree with you that for a period of 5 years, they have to be crime-free. The question obviously before the court is, when does that pack of 5 years have to be served?
Where do you see in the statute it says a five-year period alone is sufficient?
Well, in the statute, actually, it says after a five or more years, consecutive years, without a conviction. That's actually what the plain language of the statute says, right?
It doesn't say after 5 years.
No, it does not. It says after five or more consecutive years, but that doesn't change or make Paseno incorrect.
So what do you think or more consecutive means?
Well, or more, I think, quite frankly, given State v. Swanson, and knowing where the discretion rests under the statute, not with the trial court, but with the petitioner, I think actually ebbs and flows very nicely with the Paseno interpretation, because the or more is recognizing that a petitioner doesn't have to run into court right at 5 years in a day and say, oh, hey, ready to roll.
In Paseno, they didn't really decide that. They just said, we can't figure out what the legislature meant. It's ambiguous, so we'll just apply the rule of lenity. That's what they decided.
They did. They went down this sort of what I've referred to as this sort of pipeline of statutory interpretation. And that's not necessarily wrong, but quite frankly.
Let me interrupt you.
Sure.
There's a statement in Paseno that there are no particular rules of instruction that definitively resolve the ambiguity.
Right.
The state, in this case, identifies some rules of construction that are nowhere discussed in Paseno. Do you know if the court had before it in Paseno the kinds of arguments the state's making here and chose simply not to address them in its opinion, or did not have those arguments in front of it at all?
I'm not sure. The answer to my question is I'm not sure about what the Paseno court fully had in front of it. But what I can tell you is that Paseno did conduct a statutory construction analysis. They looked at the legislative history, which we look in under statutory construction. We look, obviously, at legislative history.
Justice Scalia was a co-author of an almost 500-page book on different rules of construction.
Sure.
The only two rules that appear that I see in Paseno are the ones that Judge Spearman identified. Is there a legislative history that discloses legislative
right.
intent and the rule of lenity? And there's a huge chasm between of rules that are not discussed anywhere in the opinion.
Right. Actually, Paseno also cites to one of this court's opinions, State v. Slatta. Which was decided based on RCW 1073-170, a statutory interpretation you all conducted some time ago about the post-conviction DNA testing statute. And in that case, one of the statutory construction principles that you all considered was what happens when the legislature omits words that we think they should have put in there. And you said that even if it's inadvertent, whether it's inadvertent or or intentional, that they omitted words. We're not going to fill in the blanks. That's not our job. And that's where you were evaluating the term imprisonment and whether or not imprisonment was just jail, or was it also, or prison, or was it also community custody. And what I submit to the court here is that you actually have to adopt the state's interpretation, you actually have to do something to the statute. You have to add the words immediately preceding. To adopt the Paseno interpretation or Mr. Dennis's interpretation, you don't have to do a thing. You can look right actually at the plain language of the statute, because
Well, the language isn't plain, because Pisano even says it's ambiguous.
Pisano does go
and
right.
Applies the rule of lenity. Essentially, tie goes to the defendant in a case involving criminal statutes.
Right.
So there isn't plain language. This isn't a plain language case.
Right. But in response to whether or not the Paseno interpretation renders the language of the statute meaningless or not, there's plenty to say. The Paseno interpretation actually ebbs and flows with that statutory language. For example, if you actually look at RCW 941-040-4A, Roman numeral 2B, that talks about the non-felony convictions and that the person has to wait for three or more consecutive years before they can come in before the court and ask for restoration. And what's interesting about that is that the state's interpretation is saying, hey, listen, because Mr. Dennis got a 2014 simple misdemeanor, that's not a disqualifying conviction, he has to reset and start from 5 years. But if that disqualifying conviction would have been an assault in the fourth degree with a designation of domestic violence, which is a disqualifying crime, he would have only had to wait three. So the state's interpretation is actually in direct conflict with one of the provisions of this statute.
Was it in direct conflict or reflective value judgment that you disagree with?
I would submit to the court that it is in direct conflict. And in fact, you have to do so much more to this statute to adopt the state's interpretation than you do with the Paseno interpretation.
You're talking about two folks who have a different status. One of them is a felon. He's got felony convictions. The other one is a person who only has misdemeanor convictions. I mean, that's why the one is 5 years, one is 3 years. So they're not similarly situated. I'm not sure why that's an issue.
I appreciate the court, but I think that they are. And I can address that again either now or in rebuttal if it pleases the court.
You can go into your rebuttal time if you want.
I'll address that first thing up. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. Laura Petrigal for King County, the state of Washington, in this matter. We are asking this court to affirm the trial court's denial of Mr. Dennis's petition for a firearm restoration. Now, we'll admit that the statute is not a model of clarity, but 941-040 does two things. It lays out who may not legally possess a firearm, and subsection 4 lays out for the rest of the people who can't when they can come back to the court and ask for that right back. And subsection 4 lists the people who can never come before the court, people with Class A felonies, sex offenses, felonies of 20 years or more in a sentence. They can't come to the court. And for everyone else, it identifies a point in time where an individual can come in and can petition for that right. It requires one task of a trial court, looking at the criminal history on a felony, looking at a point in time when the individual comes before the court and says, I'd like my rights back. The appellant relies on two main points for their argument, asking you to find any five-year period. They obviously rely on the 2015 Division II case, Paseno, and they rely on legislative acquiescence, saying, well, Paseno was decided, the legislature hasn't changed it, so therefore it must be right. Those two arguments do not support their argument. First of all, Paseno is factually very similar. There's no debate between the parties on that. But what Paseno has is one major flaw. Paseno went from essentially finding that the statute was ambiguous, looking very briefly at legislative history, saying, well, that's not really helpful here because it doesn't address the five-year period. It doesn't talk about a five-year period. And then they immediately jumped to the rule of lenity, applied that, and found for Mr. Paseno. But what Paseno didn't do, and what I'm urging this court to do, is between that step of finding ambiguous, because most statutes upon first reading are susceptible to multiple interpretations, but then to apply the other rules of statutory construction which are applicable here.
Do you know the answer to the question earlier, whether the Paseno court had before it state arguments on construction?
I do not know that. I would say, obviously, looking at the opinion in Pisano, it's clear they didn't, and I went through several times, they didn't raise those and dismiss them. They weren't discussed. I don't know what else they had before it from the parties arguing.
Is there any reason why we couldn't look at the briefs that were filed in Pisano and answer that question for ourselves?
I'm certain this court could do that.
Well, they're available online. That's why
yes.
I'm asking.
Yes, and I think it would be more useful to have seen the court actually engaged in an analysis than just remain silent on it. Here, what I would ask the court to do is to give effect to all the words in the statute and to read the statute in read it as a whole, and really not even the whole statute. When you're looking at the phrase we're talking about, that it could, if it was for after five or more consecutive years in the community without being convicted or found not guilty by reason of insanity or currently charged with any felony, gross misdemeanor or misdemeanor crimes, if the individual has no prior felony convictions that prohibit the possession of a firearm counted as part of the offender score. If you read that together, it is very clear, and that ambiguity goes away, and it's clear that the legislature was simply giving the trial court the task of looking at a point in time, looking at the history, not going back to 1 5-year period and then jumping back to the present to say, well, is anything pending? Or is there anything that scores? They were having them look at that point in time. The or more language shows that the legislator saw this as a continuing status. And when you look at that again with the currently charged language, so that the defendant can't have any pending cases, again, it makes sense. It's essentially, it renders that language meaningless because essentially you're saying a person can't have a firearm if they're charged with an offense, but once convicted of the same offense, that's fine. You can go ahead and give them their right back. It doesn't make sense.
They point out if you're convicted of an offense that ordinarily wouldn't bar you from mm-hmm. possessing a weapon, then it makes sense to look at it that way.
But in their reply brief, they do, and they say, well, maybe courts just want to prohibit firearms while a case is pending. But the court still has the power to do that. You don't need 941-040 to do that. A court can set conditions of pretrial release, pretrial conditions. If you look at sentences
Does the rule of lenity trump these rules of construction once we find it ambiguous?
I do not think it does.
Do you have a case that answers that question?
Your Honor, I do, and I don't. Let's see if I have that in here, and if I don't, I would be happy to provide an additional briefing to the court.
I'm not looking for additional briefing.
Okay. There are cases that go through the rules of statutory construction and then get to the rule of lenity. And so I
understand that, but what I don't have in the front of my mind is a case that says we always go through all of these rules of construction before we consider the rule of lenity, because the phrasing of the rule of lenity basically is if it's ambiguous, we construe it in the light most favorable to the defendant. There isn't any, unless we can otherwise figure out what the answer is. It just seems to require a finding of ambiguity.
And I didn't find a case that specifically listed the exact order. And frankly, when I looked at the cases on statutory construction, it seems that courts often apply them in slightly different orders. But what I will say is if rule of lenity trumped those other things, we'd almost never get to them in criminal statutes because we'd find ambiguity and we would jump to the rule of lenity. And that doesn't happen. The court does look at the plain meaning. In State Rivard, the court says that...
Just confounded me. You said the court looks at the plain meaning. Ambiguity assumes it doesn't have a plain meaning.
Excuse me, that was my... I guess all the language, giving effect to all the language.
I think you're telling us that there are cases where the court finds a statute ambiguous, then goes through various rules of construction, and when they fail to provide an answer, it falls back on the rule of lenity. Therefore, the rule of lenity must not trump those rules of construction.
Yes, I think that makes sense, unless I'm not hearing your question correctly, that the court has to look at the rest of the statute. And rule of lenity comes if they're looking at that and they're not finding anything. And The appellant asks that what we're requiring is to you to insert words into the statute. But again, we're not asking that you do that. In fact, the way the statute is written with the language, there is no need to insert additional words into the statute. The statute as written clearly identifies that point in time an individual can come back.
Do you know whether the legislature was asked to consider any amendments to the statute in any session after Pisano was decided that would change the result of Pisano?
I do not. I do not believe they were, but I do not. I can't
WAPA
answer.
WAPA frequently will propose what it views as a correction to a mistake a court made.
I understand that, and I don't believe WAPA has, but I on the record, I haven't verified that. And addressing that legislative acquiescence, we would argue here that this court should be reluctant to find legislative acquiescence on a Division II case, one case from 2015. It's a very new case. When you look at cases on legislative acquiescence, oftentimes in many of the cases cited in appellant's brief, we're talking years and years, more than 10. And we're talking about oftentimes Washington Supreme Court cases, multiple cases. Here there's one Division II case from 2015. We would say that it is too soon to find legislative acquiescence based on that one case.
Hasn't the statute been amended since Pisano?
Briefly, I believe it has.
The legislature had an opportunity to consider the statute and didn't do anything.
And, Your Honor, that is true. I would say, though, that if the court looks, there's no other cases. So almost the reverse. The legislature could have every reason to believe that it is clear and it has been working. Again, there's one case from 2015.
Well, I had the experience of writing opinion in the very next legislative session, had the legislature pass a statute that specifically referenced the case that I authored and said it was changing the result. So
right.
They know how to do it.
Right. The final piece that I will argue is, again, looking at the entire phrase, looking at all the language, 5 or more years, no, and not currently charged, and no felonies counted as part of the offender score show these are temporarily connected. Otherwise, it's absurd results. The court's going back, finding one period. Are you then asking, well, during that period, did your felony score? It puts too much on the court. Again, Swanson, the case stated by both sides, it's a ministerial act. The court looks at a history at the point in time the petition is brought before it. I have nothing else to add.
Thank you.
So, Judge Spearman, if Mr. Dennis would have filed his petition anywhere from 5 to 15 years after the conviction, we wouldn't be here. I mean, the only thing that separates that Mr. Dennis from the Mr. Dennis that is before you is just
what
time.
If Mr. Dennis, instead of having just the negligent driving, had a 5-year history of no violations, and then he had a 10-year history of non-disqualifying felony convictions,
right,
and then he petitions, what do you think the state legislature's reaction would be to our court saying, sure, he can have his guns back?
Well, here's the thing, Your Honor. The court doesn't have discretion in the removal context or in the restoration context. And that was pointed out in State v. Swanson at page 75. And
we generally don't interpret ambiguous statutes to produce what the courts have called absurd results.
Correct. And it's not absurd. Sure, if you pitch it, oh, this person can have hundreds of crimes and still lawfully possess a firearm on its face, okay, that sounds absurd. But when you really dig in there and ask, but what kind of hundreds of crimes are we talking about? Talking about misdemeanors that are non-disqualifying?
We have non-disqualifying felonies.
And the legislature says, it says crime-free. I mean, it doesn't say certain kinds of crimes are okay to have during that period.
Right, but it's clearly, obviously worried about the disqualifying crimes. I mean, that's what resets the whole time.
It's also worried about crime-free conduct.
Correct, and Mr. Dennis had crime-free conduct actually for 16 years. And again, the only thing that separates the Mr.
Need
Dennis...
To consider your interpretation of the statute as it applies to different fact patterns, and that's the part that troubles me. I really have some question about why a legislator would think that someone with a 10-year felony history and a very old 5-year clean history would be entitled to restoration of the right to possess firearms. And I think you need to be able to answer that for us to feel comfortable with your interpretation.
Sure, and I can appreciate and understand that, and I think we're asking that you find that, or that you follow the Paseno interpretation as applied to these facts. Certainly, there might come a time where you have a different set of facts, but here
and
you have...
And what rule would we, if we adopt this interpretation, apply to say we only look at 5 years under these circumstances, and other circumstances we look at something different?
Sure, and I think courts do that all the time in their analysis.
Well, what rule would you suggest we would have?
I'm not sure that there is a perfect rule that I could suggest, Your Honor. I mean, I think that's a difficult question to answer. I think what I would, my position would be that you have to individually analyze each case that's before you and walk it down that statutory interpretation
path. Doesn't that suddenly make it discretionary rather than ministerial?
No, I don't believe that it does, Your Honor, because you're going to follow those statutory interpretation principles. And in fact, if I may finish,
sure.
Weinbrenner does tell you, that's the case, Weinbrenner, the 2009 Weinbrenner case cited to in our briefing, does talk about, yeah, you got to walk down that whole path before you get to the rule of lenity, because the rule of lenity only applies if the rule of lenity only applies if the statutory construction does not clearly set out what the appropriate interpretation is. So Weinbrenner gets you there. And one more thing about Weinbrenner is that the legislature actually, Weinbrenner fixed, the legislature addressed Weinbrenner the very next legislative session in 2010. This legislature actually just passed a law that's effective July 23rd, 2017, related to sexual assault protection orders that talks about or touches on 9.41040. And it's presumed to know about Paseno, and it hasn't addressed this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.